This afternoon, top-seeded Roger Federer beat Mario Ancic 6-1-7-5-6-4 in today's men's quarterfinals at Wimbledon is now two wins away from his sixth straight title at the All England Club. Next up for the world number one is Murat Safin. The Chicago White Sox will try to sweep Cleveland tonight when they wrap up a three-game set at U.S. Cellular Field. The Cardinals will try to bounce back from a 7-4 loss last night to the New York Mets tonight. The Chicago Cubs and the San Francisco Giants each have a win heading into Game 3 of their four-game series on the West Coast tonight. With only one scholarship player remaining from last season, Indiana basketball coach Tom Crean has had to recruit virtually an entire team. But he says the group has potential. Among the promising recruits, 6'5" guard Malik Story and 6'4" guard Nick Williams. He also plays forward. And John Pont, the coach who guided Indiana to its only Rose Bowl appearance 40 years ago, has died at the age of 80. In the 1967 regular season, Indiana finished 9-1 and represented the Big Ten in the school's only appearance in the Rose Bowl, losing to Southern Cal 14-3. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Esquire Lounge, corner of Walnut and University in historic downtown Champaign. The Esquire Lounge provides an informal atmosphere for drinking and dining, serving fish on Fridays and sandwiches and pizza every day until 1 a.m.
Corporations are taking a new approach to farming. They're combining ethanol production with feeding animals. The corporations need land, water, and a willing community. They turn to economically depressed rural communities and promise jobs. But some researchers think these rural communities could end up with more problems than benefits. Kenna Oman reports.
Bion Environmental Technologies is just like a lot of big businesses trying to capitalize on the ethanol trend. Over the past year, people from Bion have been working with local officials in St. Lawrence County, a rural area of northern New York. Bion plans to build their first project there. It'll be a huge indoor feedlot for 84,000 beef cattle, right next to a large corn ethanol plant. They have everything accounted for. They'll ship cattle and corn in from the Midwest. They'll use distiller's grain from the ethanol plant to help feed the cattle. And they'll even use manure from the cattle to power the ethanol plant. Jeff Capel's a manager with Bion. He says this kind of scale and integration is the future of agriculture, and he thinks it'll be great for the community.
Establishing a brand and establishing the ability, the knowledge in a consumer marketplace that there is value associated with activity in St. Lawrence County is a tide that can rise all boats. So we see this as symbiotic.
But not everyone agrees. They wonder how much water the project will need, and they wonder about pollution from all those cattle. Shane Rogers knows a lot about pollution from factory farms. He's a professor of environmental engineering at Clarkson University in St. Lawrence County. He tests for certain pollutants in the water and soil around factory farms. Rogers often finds antibiotic-resistant E. coli and other pathogens. He says that type of discharge can happen every day, even at the best-run facilities.
And these are from operations with good practices, or what we would call good practice, because they're following nutrient management plans, because they're treating their manures the way they're supposed to be before they apply them to land, because they're collecting and doing things the way they're supposed to be. But they still can contribute pathogens to the environment, and those pathogens still affect us.
Rogers says factory farms don't need to remove these pollutants. But people at Bion say their system will reduce a lot of them. James Morris is one of their engineers. He says they're motivated to keep environmental impacts low.
A facility of this sort wants to have the minimum possible environmental liability because that lowers the risk and raises the probability of profits. And we're in the business to make money.
But researchers are still unconvinced. And some think there are better ways to provide meat and dairy products for the country. Doug Gurian-Sherman's with the Union of Concerned Scientists. He's the lead author of a new report critical of large factory farms. He says small and medium-sized farms can provide what people need without the risk to those in rural communities.
When you spread these animals out, and you have smaller operations, you have benefits to rural communities in terms of not as many problems with the pathogens or the odor or the nutrient problems. What we're talking about are sophisticated, smart alternatives that work with nature rather than against it.
But Bayan insists their large integrated project will work, and they expect to receive millions in taxpayer subsidies to help make it work. It's unclear what the cost will be to the community. In the meantime, the trend continues. Bayan plans to build at least 5 more of these projects throughout the country. For The Environment Report, I'm Kinna Oman.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. Have something to say about The Environment Report? Send email to feedback@environmentreport.org.
Coming up this afternoon on The World from PRI, Shayun Kuti sings about government greed and poverty in Nigeria and tells us what he thinks Africans need to do about these issues. A Nigerian sings out. That story in the day's news coming up on The World this afternoon at 3 o'clock. You can also hear the program in the evenings, Monday through Friday at 7 here on AM 580. And we hope you'll join us Thursdays at 4:45 and 6:45 during All Things Considered for the Environmental Almanac, and Fridays at 4:45 and 6:45 for the Public Square. It's 2:47. Like most national parks, Dinosaur National Monument outside of Salt Lake City, Utah, has a junior ranger program. Kids fill out a booklet, pledge to take care of the park, and they get a little badge. NPR's Jeff Brady found this park also enlists junior paleontologists.
Who would have guessed that millions of years ago, northeastern Utah was a hotspot for dinosaurs? And now, families like the Hazelwoods from Lexington, Kentucky, come to see the leftover bones. 10-year-old Justin Hazelwood is the family expert and an aspiring paleontologist.
Paleontologists study, like, what kind of fossils and what they used to live there. They, like, try to find new bones.
His mom, Kay Hazelwood, says Justin's obsession has become a family learning experience.
I didn't know anything about dinosaurs until he got interested in them when he was, like, 3. And we used to read dinosaur information books at bedtime. And my mom refused to read them because she couldn't pronounce the names. And she's like, I'm not reading those.
Justin's about to become an official junior paleontologist. There's an impressive gold star badge to be earned, but only after he completes a few tasks. First, there's an activity booklet. He's on page 3, picking out and circling the dinosaurs on a page filled with all kinds of animals.
The ones that flew, swam in water, and that are mammals are not dinosaurs. Dinosaurs were all reptiles.
Justin has inspired me to learn more, too, and maybe even earn one of those cool badges.
This one is a dinosaur?
A stegosaurus.
Yeah. Okay, that one's a horse.
Yeah.
That one?
That one's not, because it goes into water.
Oh, okay.
That's an early crocodile, but it was not considered in the dinosaur time.
The activity booklet is relatively new. Carla Beasley with the Park Service says the goal is to teach the 2,000 or so kids who come through each summer that fossils tell a story about the past and that you shouldn't stick them in your pocket.
We want them to keep the fossils that they find, like out on the trail or something, in place, because a paleontologist can come and learn a lot more about that fossil by knowing where it is, not just what it is.
In addition to the booklet, there's a short hike.
Welcome, everyone. My name's Ranger Matt. I'm going to be your guide for the tour this morning.
After a short bus ride, Matt Groyle leads us up a steep trail along a rock face.
You know, because we came just from coming down the steps there when we turned down here. We went about 20 million years.
Out on the walk, we run into another dinosaur fan, Tyler Sachs from Jupiter, Florida, and he's just spotted something interesting sticking out of the rock.
My sisters think it looks like wood, but I sort of think that it looks like bone. And I looked at it like this, and I see very, very small holes in it.
And what does that tell you?
Well, I know that some bones have holes in them, so it can, like, make blood and stuff.
For those of us with less trained eyes, there are white arrows pointing to some of the fossils. But figuring out what part of the dinosaur they were isn't easy.
It looks probably like some sort of leg or arm piece or something like that.
As our walk ends, Justin Hazelwood and the other soon-to-be junior paleontologist get an encouraging word from Ranger Matt.
And you guys were doing just a fantastic job of finding your fossils. You are excellent paleontologists.
And then it's back to the visitor center to pick up our hard-earned badges, but only after raising our right hands and taking the junior paleontologist pledge.
I.
Your name.
Your name.
Your name.
You promise to take care of the fossils.
Promise to take care of the fossils.
And learn about...
Jeff Brady, NPR News, at Dinosaur National Monument near Vernal, Utah.
I promise to take care.
At the Gettysburg National Military Park in Pennsylvania, you can hear the story of two Civil War generals. Education specialist Barbara Sanders likes teaching about them. General Lewis Armistead and General Winfield Scott Hancock were friends. They fought together in the U.S. Army against Mexico and were both stationed in California when the Civil War was about to begin.
All Army officers, especially those with allegiances to the South, had to make very difficult decisions. Or were they going to stay in the United States Army and fight for the Union, or with their state and fight for the Confederacy? Lewis Armistead, he was from Virginia, and he anxiously awaited what his state was going to do, and his allegiances were going to be with whatever the state of Virginia decided. The state of Virginia did secede from the Union, and that was his answer. He was going to fight for the Confederate States of America. And just before he was to leave to come east, Winfield Scott and his wife were having a final farewell party. The only account of this farewell comes from Mrs. Hancock. She said the most crushed of the party was Major Armistead, who, with tears, which were contagious, streaming down his face, said, "Hancock, goodbye. You can never know what this has cost me, and I hope God will strike me dead if I am ever induced to leave my native soil should worse come to worse." From that party, they both come east to fight on different sides of the Civil War. And the Civil War began in 1861. The battle here at Gettysburg was in July of 1863. It lasted for 3 days, and both men surely knew that the other was on these fields of battle. 13,000 Confederate soldiers lined up at a place called the Angle, where two stone walls meet at a 90-degree angle. It was chaotic. It was a smoke-filled field. It was louder beyond our imaginations. It was confusing. Men were moving here and there and stopping each other. There was hand-to-hand combat. Lewis Armistead, fighting for the Confederate cause, put his hat on the end of his sword and led his men the whole way across that field. And he was one of only a couple of hundred men who broke through that stone wall, heading towards a group of cannon that they were going to capture. And it was there that he was hit by two bullets and fell mortally wounded. Someone from Hancock's staff stopped and inquired about the injury and who this man was. Armistead said, "Tell General Hancock for me that I have done him and you all an injury which I shall regret the longest day that I live." And although the Civil War would go on for 2 more years after this battle, many believe it never was the same. It was here, and specifically where General Armistead fell, that signals the beginning of the end for the Confederate cause.
Barbara Sanders is the park education specialist at Gettysburg National Military Park. That piece was produced by NPR's Amy Walters.
100 years after his birth, Thurgood Marshall has become a character on Broadway.
As a boy, I came to understand two things marked my family: distinctive names and extreme stubbornness.
Lawrence Fishburne portrays this key figure in civil rights history.
People like Justice Marshall sort of, it's amazing how they kind of show up when we need them.
Thurgood, the play, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 Central on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
It's 2:54, 88 degrees now in Urbana. Let's take a look at Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana and the Champaign-Urbana area as well. The forecast for Illinois and Indiana is topped by a severe thunderstorm watch. It is in effect for portions of north central and northeastern Illinois and far northwestern Indiana until 4 o'clock. this afternoon. Ed's forecast now this afternoon in northern and west central Illinois and in far northern Indiana. Increasing cloudiness with scattered showers and thunderstorms arriving during the afternoon. Elsewhere, mostly sunny with only a few isolated showers. Highs ranging from 85 in the far north to 92 in southwestern Illinois. Tonight in the north and in central sections, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms. In the south, increasing cloudiness with showers and thunderstorms arriving after midnight. Lows tonight ranging from 60 in northwestern Illinois to 68 in the south. Tomorrow in northern Illinois, partly to mostly sunny. In northern Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered showers early, then becoming partly sunny. In central and southern sections, mostly cloudy tomorrow with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs ranging from 70 near Lake Michigan to 85 in the far south. In Champaign-Urbana this afternoon, Ed says look for mostly sunny skies. It will be breezy and more humid, the high near 90. The wind from the south to southwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour with higher gusts. Tonight, mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms, the low 66. The wind from the southwest at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with occasional showers, perhaps a thunderstorm, the high 78. The wind from the north to northeast at 7 to 14 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy with some showers and thunderstorms, the low 60. Friday, mostly cloudy with a chance of a few showers, especially during the morning and early afternoon. The high for the 4th, 74. Friday night, gradual clearing, the low 57. Saturday, mostly sunny, the high 82. Well, Friday is a holiday, the 4th of July, Independence Day. So what we're going to do ahead of the holiday tomorrow on Thursday, the 3rd of July, we're going to have two special Talk to Eds. The first one will be during Morning Edition at 7:50, and then here on the Afternoon Magazine at 12:40. Central Time. So if you've got plans to travel over the holiday weekend, give us a call. Talk to Ed. He'll give you a forecast for your destination. He can also tell you what you might encounter along the way. That's special. Talk to Ed's tomorrow in Morning Edition and here on the Afternoon Magazine.
Earth and Sky.
Gas to liquids is a process where we take natural gas and convert that into liquids.
You're listening to Carl Mesters, who is Chief Scientist for Chemistry and Catalysis for Shell. He's talking about gas-to-liquids technology being developed for transportation.
Typically, you're used to transportation fuels being derived from crude oil. You start already from an oil, and you convert that into different liquid products. Here we start from a gas.
Earth's growing population means more vehicles and more pollution. Mesters said the gas-to-liquids process leads to a cleaner-burning fuel.
Sulfur content in this gas-to-liquids product is virtually zero. So if there's no sulfur in your liquid, there can't be any sulfur emissions.